On today's episode of the Direct Podcast, more Fantastic Four castings, X-Men 2000 rewatch, and everything else you need to know about the universes you love right here on the Direct Podcast.
Truth is,
I am a Jedi.
I'm the Vengeance.
And I am Iron Man.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in, welcome on, welcome to another episode of the Direct Podcast, Season 3, Episode 14, everything you need to know about the universes you love. I'm your host, Matt Rimke, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, co-host, box office correspondent, senior editor at thedirect.com, Superman fan, David Thompson. Oh, David, how are we doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great, man. Recording this on a Monday, posting it on a Tuesday. Happy to be here. So much news to discuss in pretty much every universe we cover. All the universes you love are being hit today, I'm pretty sure. Maybe besides the Iron Brand, but yellow, blue, red, we got everything. And, you know, maybe something will pop up in the next 24 hours we'll have to squeeze in. But yeah, we got a very exciting show today. Happy to be here. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm doing well. And listen, I know we don't have any Iron Brand updates today, but House of the Dragon is coming very fast, and I'm very excited for it.
And actually, there was, speaking of this, it's not on the news cycle, but there's another spinoff happening that just got the casting for. So actually, there was an update to the Iron Brand that we're just not really covering today, but we'll get to that series whenever there's a lot more on that.
Why are we not covering it? Why can't we squeeze it in? It's because we got a big episode here today. Today's the beginning of the Mutant Marathon. That is right, ahead of Deadpool versus Wolverine. Deadpool and Wolverine, that's gonna be a tricky one for me. I'm gonna say verse a lot. I mean
they're kind of marketing it as versus everything. We've seen so far besides the title has given versus vibes.
I mean, you know, that's one of the best tropes in movies is when the team up has to fight first before they team up. I mean, come on, it's a classic.
Yeah.
Ahead of Deadpool and Wolverine, we will be rewatching every single Foxman movie. Every movie released by Fox of the X-Men. That includes the original trilogy. That includes the Wolverine trilogy. That includes the reboot trilogy plus Dark Phoenix. And it also includes the New Mutants and Deadpool 1 and 2. It's going to be a long, long go, guys. We got 3 months of that.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's more than you think. We're starting this in April for a reason, but yep. I think it's really exciting, like, for those that are like us that are very, very highly anticipating the release of Deadpool 3, Deadpool versus Wolverine, whatever you want to call it. This is the beginning. This is the starting line for us. It is going to be a marathon leading up till that moment, the weekend of San Diego Comic-Con, and it's all starts right now. It's all building to that one weekend, one moment, and I cannot wait. The only MCU movie this year. God, the hype is going to be so real by the time we get there.
The Mutant Era of the Direct Podcast begins today because we're also reviewing episode 4 of X-Men 97. So that's a lot of news to get to. So let's go ahead and get to it. Make sure to check out the Direct Extras YouTube page. Follow my boy, David Thompson, on Twitter, David Thompson with two A's. And follow me at Matt Rimke, R-O-E-M-B as a boy, K. E, but that's enough of that. Let's get into it. Everything you need to know about the universes you love.
Spider-Man wasn't attacking the city. He was trying to save it. That's slander.
It is not. I resent that. Slander is spoken. In print, it's libel.
All right, everybody. Everything you need to know about the universes you love. For anybody paying attention, you probably know what story we are leading off with today. I said to follow us on Twitter because that's kind of where the action's happening right now. We had an exclusive on the Direct Podcast yesterday. That is right. Less than 24 hours from recording, we had an exclusive quote from David Corenswet, and it was received by our boy, the box office correspondent himself, the oracle of David Corenswet, David Thompson. Corenswet and Thomas, the story of two Davids. David, what the hell happened last night? How did we get to where we are today?
Dude, it was crazy. So here's kind of how it went. Many of you probably saw out there that he posted on an Instagram story, hey, I'm going to be at this screening for The Greatest Hits, this new Hulu movie coming out, very limited screens in theaters right now. Basically, it's in Atlanta, South Atlanta, near, I believe, where the studios are that he is filming. Superman. So makes sense. He's going to swing by to open up. Very nice guy. Totally didn't have to come and promote this movie. Like, it seemed very on his own accord. Like, hey, I'm going to go do this. Go out my way. You know, kind of talk it up a little bit. You know, get some fans excited for it. Just very nice. And he was there for that movie. But of course, I'm sure he anticipated some Superman fans being there. So essentially what happens is we go, we buy tickets, we get there early. We were actually the first ones in the theater. We were kind of walking around and walked in there, met another fan there. He was telling me how excited he was for Superman. I was wearing my Superman shirt, so it's pretty obvious like who I was there for and why I was there. Nope. With that being said, and I always dress for the occasion. My mom always finds it so funny. So like my Colts jersey and whatever shirt, my Spider-Man shirts, all those things. And, you know, it really worked out this time. So anyway, we're sitting around waiting. And the guy that was sitting next to me, who I had been speaking to, that was a fan, he had like gotten up and down a couple of times, going to get popcorn, go to the restroom. And one time he was gone for a little while and still plenty of time before the movie kicks off. He comes back and he sits down next to me and he goes, hey, man, he's out there. And he's holding his comic book cover and he's like, he's taking autographs, but he's not doing photos. So we beeline it out there. I'm like telling Jasmine, like, let's go, let's go, let's go. He's out there. And so here's where the quote came from, which is an interesting story, because it wasn't when we were actually specifically talking. What happened was I hop in line. There's only a couple of people in front of me and he starts signing this one kid's For All Seasons Superman cover. And they mention, oh, For All Seasons, that's awesome. So he says something like that. And the guy's like, yeah, thank you so much. And of course, me 5 feet away chimes in. Hey, is it based on that? Just kidding. But I got his attention and he kind of answers and he's like, no, like the vibes are very similar to this one and All-Star, but the story is totally its own thing. And I kind of, you know, backlogged that for a second for later when I would tweet out. But what happens next, which was my favorite personal part, it was amazing meeting him. It's my turn. Great handshake. I go, hey, how are you? I'm David too. And that was the first thing that either of us said. And he's like, oh, that's awesome. Spelled the right way, right? And I'm like, yeah, D-A-V-I-D. And I'm like, how else would you spell it? I didn't say that, but I'm like, what? But it was cool. And
I should have asked that. That's the more important question. How?
Well, you know what I thought? David. I was like, I should have asked trunks or no trunks. But, you know, it was a very just friendly interaction.
Yeah, it hit you.
By the way, it was really funny. You know, he was like kind of standing like this.
Sure.
And he was doing the like nurse, doctor, physical therapist dance, where his legs were like wide. So he didn't even look as tall as he did. And then he goes to sign my shirt and he stands up like, oh, wow, you are a big, big dude. People were asking that, like, is he as big as he seems? And I'm like, yes.
Frame of reference for everybody listening who's never seen us, because why would you have? David, how tall are you?
6'2".
6'2". And David's like, yeah, big guy. Come on.
Yeah. That's no, he is.
Guy. That's a big guy.
He is a big guy. Like, I felt like pretty small next to him. And anyway, what was really funny, and I just have to park on this, he was so genuinely nice. Like, he was so genuinely nice to me. But also what was really cool was I asked him to sign my shirt, because that was all I really had for him to sign. I wasn't really prepared, but it worked out great. And I have it over my shoulder. And he's like, yeah, he's like, he loved the idea. He's like, yeah, awesome. That sounds great. And what was really nice about him was he actually got Jasmine involved, because she's kind of just standing to the side, like smiling and like knowing this is like a big moment for me. And he looks at her and it's like, hey, so where should it go? And this was my favorite moment. She like points to like up here by my like collarbone shoulder. And we both, me and David, both look at her and like, no, it's got to go in the middle. And that's when he slapped me like this in the chest. He's like, it's got to go there. And I'm like, thank God he didn't just break my sternum. No, I'm just kidding. But it was so cool. Like, he was just such a genuine guy. And that was like my biggest takeaway for someone who is taking over as Clark Kent Superman. Like, you couldn't have a more genuine, nice guy for my quick interaction. He signs it. I was the last person he talked to individually, the last autograph. The representative that was there was like, hey, it's time. And David's kind of like, all right, you want to go watch this movie? And I'm like, yeah. And then bolt into the screening. And he said some words that I posted on Twitter, basically that, you know, talking about his experience with the movie that he had made. He also mentioned, I don't know if it was on the video, he mentioned that he hadn't spoken in front of that many people since he was filming that movie like a year and a half ago, which was kind of cool. And yeah, just a genuinely really great guy, an amazing experience, and such a cool full moment experience for me, especially like with this podcast, having been talking about him since before pretty much anyone on the internet. And it's just really exciting. And I mean, if my hype wasn't high enough for Superman in 2025, it's just through the roof now.
Yeah, I mean, what a moment, what a story. Like I was watching. Me and Aaron were watching Notting Hill out of all things, right? And we're just hanging out, we're doing whatever.
Yeah.
And Sunday night, chilling. I popped on the main event for WrestleMania just to watch it.
Yeah.
And I see all this like David Corn sweat news. I'm like, wait a minute, hold on. David's tagged at this stuff. Like this, he's just going off. You know what I mean? He's just
in his
bag, because that's what you do. You get in your bag. And I didn't realize there was this actual interaction that you guys had. And that's amazing. And I'm so excited for you. And that's the kind of stuff that's gonna lock you into this movie. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we hope it's really good, right? This is your fucking movie now. You know, if it wasn't before, like your flag is here, and it's a great flag to get behind, my guy. I mean, it's Superman, it's James Gunn, and now we like the guy? Come on. I mean, that's...
Love the guy.
You can't beat it.
By the way, I gotta say, the last thing on this, Jasmine's one analysis, commentary on the whole interaction was, wow, he is so good looking. Yeah. Basically, that he is better looking than I even expected, and... He is, you know, he had the hat. He had this like classic look, like the hat and the like. He had the Eagles sweatshirt on, like you couldn't really see his muscles, but they're definitely under there. I can definitely say with 100% certainty, he's a big guy and he's gonna make, I hope, a really great Superman.
So he was hiding his muscles with oversized clothes. I feel like we're on the right track. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's good stuff. It's good stuff. I'm very excited for you, and you know, we're very excited for the DCU. Like the hype train could not be more rolling on the DCU, but you know, DC in general. Also, something, let's talk about the brand new first look Joker 2 teaser.
It turns out the joke is on us. We waited to release this episode on Tuesday morning, expecting the full Joker 2 trailer to release sometime today. It is releasing, but not until way too late this evening. So we will be officially reacting to all the news at CinemaCon and especially this Joker 2 trailer on next episode of the Direct Podcast. Sorry about that. We've been bamboozled. Thanks, WB. Thanks, DC. Now back to the news.
All right. Next story. Still in the DC. Still in the DCU. Still in the blue brand. Here we go. Back to James Gunn's DCU. Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, starring Millie Alcock. Like, are we loving the casting for the DCU more than we've loved anything on this podcast right now? Like everything is the people we love doing the things that we want them to do.
Yeah.
A new director is in talks for Superman, Woman of Tomorrow. Big movie. This is going to be the follow-up, right?
Well, that's the thing. Like, it seems like the schedule has shifted and changed, and they're apparently reportedly going to be filming this. I think it was whoever was a part of this article, this report about the director, mentioned they want to start filming this in quarter four. So at the end of this year, which in theory would make it then the second cinematic experience for the new DCU, which wasn't, I don't think, initially the plan, but the script came into tact really quickly. They got the casting. They're going to introduce her apparently in Superman. And yeah, this could be the next installment post Superman, maybe sometime in 2025.
And that's a big movie because like Superman has so much going for it. The floor seems to be pretty high, at least on paper, right? We have James Gunn. It's fucking Superman. Like it's, you know, there's not a lot of, you very much can mess it up, but you have everything there to really set this off in a great way. Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow, lesser known character, the follow up to a James Gunn movie. You know what I mean? Like that's going to be a very important piece of the DCU moving forward, because like one good movie, a lot could argue, kind of what the DCEU did with Man of Steel, right? So it's going to be very interesting. And the director in talks is Greg Gillespie. And if you don't know that name, it is Cruella, starring Emma Stone. It is I, Tonya, starring Margot Robbie. Dumb Money, starring Paul Dano. And Pam and Tommy, the Pam and Tommy Lee Hulu.
Sebastian Stan. Yeah,
Hulu. Sebastian Stan Lily Collins, Seth Rogen.
Did you watch it? Seth Rogen's in that
Nick
too.
Nick Offerman.
Yeah.
No, I did not.
Seth Rogen's also in Dumb Money. I just realized that.
Must be a Gillespie guy.
It would be in this movie.
Seth Rogen confirmed as
no idea.
Somebody in the DC.
Some dumb villain.
Booster Gold.
some dumb alien.
So Greg Gillespie has a really awesome rundown of big movies he's made. I've enjoyed the movies of these that I've seen, that being Cruella and I, Tonya. I enjoy them quite a bit.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, the through line here, minus maybe Dumb Money, is really powerful, great use of a female lead in a lot of these movies. And, you know, Cruella and I, Tonya alone, like, those are two stellar performances. One on like an Oscar type level with I, Tonya. I don't remember if there was a lot of noms, but it felt like that kind of movie. And then the other with Cruella, this Disney movie that I think was a really awesome remake. One of my favorite live action Disney remakes in some time.
It's my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's really great. I love that movie. The Emmas, Thompson and Stone. Also a lot of Sebastian Stan. Lot of Sebastian Stan across this list here, because he was also Gulli in I, Tonya.
He's also in Dumb Money.
Is he?
Yeah. Wait, that's crazy.
Yeah. So Sebastian Stan, great Gillespie guy.
I guess so.
There we go. Now we're talking.
Now, yeah, now there we're go. Talking. We found someone with three.
We can fancast Sebastian Stan like a motherfucker. Hey,
and James Gunn gets his guys, and so maybe he'd want his creatives to get their guys too.
That is very funny. So your thoughts, you know, Greg Gillespie, good run here. Supergirl won it tomorrow. We excited. It's a report, but, you know, this is how these things start.
Well, I hope it doesn't fall through, because I am excited. I think he'll be a really great choice. I think it's someone who, through Cruella, I could see him getting into more of the franchise superhero game. And this is going to be a gritty, swearing Supergirl. Like, it is going to be badass. And I cannot wait for this movie. I think it's awesome they found a director. I think this is a very, very, very strong choice, especially making this jump into DC. And I think this is setting up to be another very strong installment of the new DC universe. We're getting way ahead of ourselves, but it does seem like they're doing all the things right. You mentioned earlier, casting, writing, directing, like, this is very exciting. And then the writer of this movie is going to be writing the Teen Titans movie. So there's so many things that are building on each other. And I love how they keep trying to keep people, their creatives in-house, especially like writers, it seems like James Gunn's trying to keep this thing tight. And I love that about this. And I think it'll make for a very cohesive, great, and hopefully individually, you know, project by project, enjoyable cinematic universe that hopefully fans from all across the globe can galvanize around for really the first time in DC's history, which I just find the prospect of unbelievably exciting.
Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, we really won't know how we're supposed to feel about this universe, really, until we get our first look of Superman. And, like, that's going to be a tone setting first look, that teaser or whatever it ends up being, right? Could even be a poster, like we'll talk here in a sec. A poster can do that as well. Just give us that look, give us that tone to just set the course of expectation a little bit. And you know, heavy weight on these two movies, but obviously, you know, Supergirl is going to be very dependent on the success of Superman as well. If Superman can set Supergirl up in a big way, with Alcock being this rising star, with, you know, Supergirl being this, you know, kind of a cult classic, I guess, in the DC hero world, not a mainstream hero, I don't think, but, you know, those who ride with Supergirl in a very big way. I think we're in a good spot here to set, hopefully, Greg Gillespie up in an interesting situation. And I love that point you made about Cruella kind of moving him into a franchise type situation, because that's very much what that is. It's lore driven. It's got this, like, you know, hero kind of vibe to it with Cruella. There's the beats of a comic movie in that movie. And also Paul Walter Hauser. Ah, Dango. It's one of me and my wife's favorite jokes ever. Is anytime anybody says the word angle in any sort of way, we do the Paul Walter Hauser from Cruella. Ah, Dango. I gotta find the angle. Ah, there it is, the angle. It's very funny. Moving on from the blue brand to the red brand, very similar news. We're in the off season, baby. We got off season news across the board for all these big movies. The Fantastic Four got a very, very big update, a new casting, ladies and gentlemen. We have an antagonist. Julia Garner of Ozark fame has been cast as the female Silver Surfer in Marvel Studios Fantastic Four. For those who don't recognize the name Julia Garner or haven't seen Ozark, If you have seen Ozark, she's the townie from Ozark. If you haven't seen Ozark, she's the one from the meme that says, if you're going to stop me, you're going to have to fucking kill me.
Yeah, that's probably where most people would know her voice at least from.
1,000% Yeah. 1,000% Right. Isn't that so funny? Like Ozark, this critically acclaimed, beloved show that like captivated the Netflix crowd for so long. The meme really is.
Yeah.
Claim to fame right now. And I think that's a good thing. So yeah, obviously this news broke. This is very interesting casting because again, much like we talked about with Alcock, very fast rising star in Hollywood right now with Julia Garner, putting her as Silver Surfer. Just, I mean, hell, updates abound. Silver Surfer's in the movie, which means Galactus probably in the movie. And yeah, another part of the report is that Galactus is expected to be the main villain of the Fantastic Four. David, your thoughts on Julia Garner taking the Herald of the Galactus role here? Obviously, the female version from the comics, but we're going to assume it's going to be a Herald of Galactus situation. Silver Surfer, you know, pretty standard stuff, but with a very interesting casting choice.
Yeah, you'd think so. I mean, all of this kind of points to this being in an alternate reality, which I think we got to kind of like wrap our heads around, but we have so much time. I mean, I think Julia Garner could be really great as a Silver Surfer or any character in these franchise films. I've seen her in Inventing Anna, which I think is a Netflix show that my wife really liked. Yeah, and she's like,
"Are you poor?"
Yeah.
"Why are you poor?"
She's really funny.
Wait, hold on. Wait, I'm looking at you and I'm thinking, why are you poor?
Yeah, she's got this like, I don't know. It's a pretty funny show. It's pretty good. And
the weirdest
she's really,
accent. It's the weirdest accent.
And she's really good in it, though. Like, that's the thing. Like, she's a really good actress. I mean, I think what's interesting for me in my mind, like, Silver Surfer from the OG movie, Rise of the Silver Surfer. I don't know. I never liked that character so much. And that was really, as a kid, my first true experience with that character. So I'm really hoping that we kind of get more personality. And I think it being Julia Garner and how they go about that character and how they make Silver Surfer look. I mean, I think it is essential that Silver Surfer looks like Silver Surfer because that's just such an essential part of the character. It's literally, you know, his moniker, his name. Galactus being the main villain. Wow. I mean, that's the thing. Like, that was kind of just tossed out where it's like, okay, like, that's fantastic. Can't wait to hear who that is and how they go about doing Galactus. I mean, we have so much time until this movie comes out, but I mean, the stock is rising. And I think Marvel Studios, we talked about earlier, the mutant era is upon us, but also bringing in the Fox characters era is upon us. And I think that's going to be where a lot of their efforts are going towards with Deadpool, Wolverine, and then Fantastic Four and whatever else they have. X-Men 97, you know, Daredevil coming in from Netflix. They're integrating all these characters into the MCU, and it's a really exciting time.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, this news with Galactus also being announced as main villain, and it's a one hand washes the other kind of thing, right? You don't really get Silver Surfer without Galactus. I've read a handful of really great Silver Surfer comics from the 80s that have nothing to do with Galactus. It's a post Galactus thing. In those comics, for those who are interested, the buildup to the original Infinity Gauntlet run in the comics is a Silver Surfer Thanos story, which is very cool. It's very fun and cosmic. And that's one of my, you know, biggest touchstones to Silver Surfer, obviously, other than the movie that came out when I was in fifth grade or whatever, right? The not good one. The different universe thing, I think that I don't necessarily think that just because Julia Garner is playing Silver Surfer, that means we're in a different universe. There are so many other things pointing to this movie being in a different universe that just make all the sense in the world. But it does also open that door for anybody who really wants it. The original Norrin Rad story of Silver Surfer, which is a great origin story. Julia Garner is obviously going to be very different or the same. We don't know, I guess. But the biggest thing for me is the Galactus being in this movie is because it's in an alternate universe. We assume based on also the poster we're about to talk about. Because it's in this alternate universe, because we know we're getting Secret Wars, because, you know, there is, it's more likely than not, the odds on favorite situation would be that the Fantastic Four that we meet in this movie will be put into a more central universe, maybe 616, maybe wherever Monica Rambeau lands. We'll know more after Deadpool. We hope. Man, Deadpool Wolverine is getting a lot of Flash vibes at this point. You know what I mean? Like, we'll know more after this. And then Flash came out. We ended up not knowing anything. You know, spaghetti. That's the most we got out of it.
That was great. I love the spaghetti.
Good scene. It's a good scene. Good scene in a bad movie. No, but so the Galactus being part of it, I tweeted this out.
Yeah.
The opportunity to have Galactus in a movie where the main characters we assume are leaving that universe at some point, it gives you the chance to show Galactus doing the thing and eating a world. like Galactus the World Eater. Like that is something that I don't think we've seen in live action. Like, we got the cloud.
No way. No.
The Corsic thing. And like, to get an Alderaan moment with this Fantastic Four, like, it's a sad ending to the movie. Like, they figure out how to go to a different universe or whatever it ends up being, right? And but like, we see they leave behind a Galactus eaten world. Like, come on, man. I mean, you can't really want more than that. You know, if you're going for an Empire Strikes Back vibe with this movie, this would be the way to do it.
Yeah.
It would be absolutely nuts if that's the tone this movie ends on. It's going to be interesting to see how they play it. They could even do it like, hey, the only way to save this place is to leave it and, you know, go back, fix it. Time travel and universes are very connected in the MCU right now. And it'll just be very interesting to see how they distinct, you know, kind of what Galactus means and, you know, how that's going to play moving forward. I'm very excited about it. And like you said, how do they do it? You know, what is the vehicle of Galactus? Thankfully, I think for the MCU, there are touchstones to go off of here. You know what I mean? We do have the Celestials in the circulation here, not just from Eternals, where we got the most of them, obviously, but also Guardians 1 and, you know, just Ego.
Ego, yeah.
Nowhere, the head of a Celestial. That's very established, making Galactus one of them, the most powerful one of them, maybe.
I hope Galactus is like Ego. I feel like Ego was a very cool way of representing like a living planet, you know, where it actually like was an actor, it was a character, and like the whole planet was him. I think that was such a cool idea, and I hope it's something like that. I think that's like that to me like made a lot of sense, and it worked so well when you're trying to present a movie rather than a comic book panel.
Man, I wish James Gunn was doing this movie. No, Matt Shackman's going to be great. Matt Shackman's going to be amazing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, like, where they go with the movie. I think Galactus is a very big question mark in terms of, before we just jump off that, like, I don't want Galactus just to be in this movie. I want him to be in the MCU. I hope there is something where his presence is being felt within the MCU, and we can continue some of those stories and feel that menacing threat. For years, not just in one movie. I don't want it to be like he's defeated in this movie. Like you said, like you know, it kind of ends on maybe a bad note. It's like, oh shit, like what's going to happen now in Avengers 5? Go from there. Yeah.
It's the opportunity, the fact that like we assume the Fantastic Four are going to be jumping at some point, giving us the Thanos Hulk fight from Infinity War, like a tone setting move to see this is what Galactus can do. Show us that, you know, like show us him doing the thing, right?
Yeah.
As far as him being like Ego, I love that idea. Like, on I just had a range of reactions to you saying that, because I do love that idea in principle. What I am worried about with that is we have this guy who's a normal size for so much of the movie, and then he becomes big giant planet eating Galactus. My first thought was, man, that could look really goofy, right? If we had Kurt Russell normal size and then he blew up into this like body floating in space kind of thing, right?
Macy's Day Parade looking ass.
Exactly. But Giant Man in Civil War is one of the best parts of one of the best movies.
Yeah.
And that wasn't goofy. You know what I mean? Like Giant Man kicks ass. So like,
and the Celestials look cool in Eternals.
Exactly. It's just the idea of like a very human looking person becoming a very human looking giant.
You don't want it to be like the guy from Quantumania.
We need a helmet.
Or does the George Lopez from Sharkboy and Lava Girl moment.
Yeah, we need a helmet for sure. It'll be interesting. Another quick Fantastic Four update, new poster with Johnny Storm on it to celebrate 4-4 Day. Lot going on with this poster. Another look at the Human Torch having that OG Human Torch look, which is really cool to see.
The suit.
The suit looks great. I loved that and Fantastic, how you know, like Michael B. Jordan like was that Black Human Torch like the Blackstone flame mm-hmm. Human Torch, as opposed to just Chris Evans on fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
which I think that that's a really cool thing. That it's great comic accuracy moment there. But also retro New York. David, seems to be what you're most excited about from this Fantastic Four news, is a look at alt New York, whatever that might be.
Absolutely. I mean, first off, it's incredible we got this poster. The fact that we've gotten these two concept art posters from Fantastic Four, and they don't even start filming, I think, until August. So we are so far away from this movie releasing, but I love it. I love how they're ramping it up. I love how they are already giving us little crumbs just to eat at. And yeah, this look, first off, to me, this confirms it's going to be an alternate universe. It's clearly like it's a futuristic retro, because we are assuming this is based in an alternate 1960s, but it has a futuristic feel because it is an alternate universe. And I love the idea of that. I think that sounds so cool, where sure, they're in the 1960s, but it's not our 1960s. So our perception of reality and what that means to be set during that time period can be changed in terms of technology, which I think is a very big deal. Like, style could be the same, but maybe technology is advanced. And that's a very critical thing to having Reed Richards active in this universe. And I think it sounds so cool. My biggest concern, I tweeted this out too, it's like, wait, what if we just really like this universe? Like, I don't want to leave. I don't want to go anywhere. Which I think would be a very great issue to have. Like, that's one of those things where it's like,
yeah,
what an awesome problem to have. You know, mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I have too much money to spend.
Yeah.
That's a great problem to have. You know, oh, I love this alternate universe. What an amazing problem to have. And I hope that's the case.
Yeah. And I think that it's like that situation. A lot of people on Twitter, whatever, it's not real. I've decided that most criticism of big movies is not real.
Well, do you look at people's profile pictures?
Only if they're real people.
Exactly.
If your profile picture is a cartoon and you're a fan, I respect you. If you're a commenter, get lost. Kick rocks barefoot. You know what I mean? That tweet the other day but the alt universe thing, I feel like a pessimist would be like, oh man, this great universe, of course they're never gonna go back there. Wow, what a waste of an amazing thing. No, why can't we just love it? Why can't
yeah.
we just, like, how cool is it that this movie has this amazing universe? It's going to be difficult to set up, it's going to be difficult to define rules. Also, that's going to be a lot of great exposition filler throughout the movie. It's so MCU to have exposition be delivered in an engaging, interesting way. What if the exposition was describing a new universe, pizza balls, and how it all works?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also
thinking, yeah,
it's going to be really cool. It was done okay in Multiverse of Madness. I think doing it with the Fantastic Four as an origin story type, that's where you get your origin story vibes. We're not meeting mm-hmm. this team for the first time. Like, they're not discovering themselves as a team. We're discovering the universe they live in. And yeah. that's where you get that origin feel.
And the hierarchy and the team. Like, we're learning, like, who this team is in this universe. And I think that could be really cool quickly. Like, if they are interwoven in, like, how they view themselves. They're not this new
right.
team. They're not this new kid on the block. They're like, we're the guys. You yeah. know, like, we are them. We are him. We are him. And then they do their thing. Yeah.
God damn. Fuck.
Sorry about Iowa. Yeah.
But no, she's ours now. She's ours now.
I was gonna say, I'm going. When Atlanta's WNBA team hosts Indiana, I will be there. That is for sure.
I'm gonna be going to a lot of Fever games, I think. Like, a yeah. lot.
Sounds awesome.
I can't wait. But no, to that point though, like, one of the best things about the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies is New York is a character. You know what I mean? Like, those types of movies where the Game of Thrones, Westeros is one of the biggest characters in Game of Thrones. And
right.
whenever you can make your environment a character, it does something, at least for me, where I love that movie so much more. To do that with yeah. this, I think, would be such an awesome way to approach it. And again, Matt Shackman, what he did with WandaVision, making that alternate reality such a character in that show, I feel good about his ability to do that. You know what I mean? It'll be cool. And also, just to, like, nerd out a little bit, the tech opportunities here to show off, like, MCU, one of the things they've done best over the last, God, 15 years? 17 years?
17?
16, 17 years? Something like that, yeah. One of the things they've done best is the visual style of tech, the visual style of move sets within characters, the visual stylings of the MCU, I think is really impressive. Stark yeah. tech is a very identifiable thing. Wakanda tech, a very identifiable thing. Mystic Arts, nanotech, all that stuff. Like when we see the Helicarrier for the first time and we see it's a giant Iron Man thing lifting up the, like, that type of stuff just works so often
right.
in the MCU. And we saw a little bit of it in Multiverse of Madness. What does John Krasinski show up in? That square portal thing.
Yes. Right? Oh, man, can we see that again? That'd be so cool.
Well, dude, we've already seen it again. You go to Quantumania and all the Kangs are showing up in that right. square portal thing because right. they are Richards. You know what I mean? So, like, they've already established it a little bit. And that's what's so exciting about that to me. And I can't wait to see how, because they're going to make a meal out of it. You know what I mean? They are going to highlight the tech of the Baxter Building versus Stark Industries or Avengers Tower or Wakanda. They're going to do that. And I think it's going to be really cool to see how they do it. Another thing that's pretty fucking cool, man.
Yeah.
Daredevil Born Again is... I've been a very positive spot with this show. For those who don't know, I guess it's been a little while since we talked about it. This show was supposed to be 16 episodes and have this alternate universe type style, yada, 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 blase, blase. It was completely stripped. They rewrote the script. They kind of retooled everything. We've been calling it a rebuild. And this was one of the first signs that I was trusting where the MCU was going after the Bob Iger move, because they are taking their most anticipated project, Deadpool Wolverine aside. Like Daredevil might be more. Like, we don't know. But one of their most anticipated projects.
Disney Plus. Yeah.
Definitely the biggest Disney Plus project they have. Mm. And they said, no, we're going to start over. We're going to delay it a full year. And we're going to retool it until it matches the quality we want it to match. A part of the original script was that Vanessa Fisk, the muse of Kingpin in the Daredevil series, mm-hmm. was recast. Somebody else. Not really that big of a deal. Recastings happen. In the rewrite, in the rebuild, Ailette Zarrer is back. The original actress of Vanessa Fisk is now back after the rebuild. David Thompson, it's Daredevil season 4, man.
Yeah. I mean,
like it's happening.
It's amazing. Like, it's crazy to think what the show... Like, there is a whole alternate universe, alternate reality where we got Born Again and it was this different show. It was this totally, like, new show trying to be in the MCU, but, like, it was that, like, soft reboot we were all hearing about. To me now, I'm expecting season 4. I'm expecting to rewatch Daredevil before this comes out and be like, this is where it picks up. Rewatch Echo, maybe. Get an update on Wilson Fisk, the whole mayor thing of it all, Hawkeye, Punisher. Holy shit. No Way Home, sneak that in. She-Hulk. It's so cool.
Yeah.
Like, all these things now are connected. Like, and why wasn't this the plan from the beginning? Like, because you, me, everyone, faceless on Twitter, whatever, is cheering right now for this, because this is how you do it. Like, there's projects like in Sony, like in Fox. You can't just say that's the MCU. With all the Netflix shows, they were in the MCU. Like, they tried to make them in the MCU and they made them small enough where they logically they fit. And what will this be? I don't know. Like, how they work this into the MCU even more. I think it's going to be season 4 with more MCU connections, and it's going to be awesome. I cannot wait, and I can't wait to get more official looks, an official release date. Like, I am so happy they redid this. I'm so happy they're rebuilding and retooling, and the patience is on. We have to be patient, but man, like you said, anticipation is high, and I think this is going to set records for their viewership on Disney Plus.
Yeah, it's got a cult following. It's got the appeal after No Way Home. It's got everything going for it. And, you know, as far as, like, why wasn't this the plan from the beginning? My speculation, my contention is, you know, the plans for the multiverse probably changed a little bit too after the Jonathan Majors thing. And, like, how they handle all reality places probably had one thought compared to where we are now. And but molding this in and just kind of embedding it a little bit on that Hawkeye Echo level, I think is the move. I think that's how you do it. I think this is where you establish that sector and, you know, the street level MCU even further. Young Avengers can come from this. Daredevil season 4 is kind of what we're thinking. And, you know, you talk about more first looks, brother. Did you see that? You see that very, very like 2 second clip of Daredevil turning around? And I feel like every time Daredevil shows up, he has a costume thing that we forgot that we wanted. And now he has red eyes.
I know pie in the sky dream. My prayer to God. Please make this connect to Spider-Man 4. I would absolutely kill. Like, how does it not? Like, here's the thing, Matt. Not going to get into this. Sony, please. If Fisk is the mayor of New York City and we are in the MCU and Spider-Man 4 is in the MCU, how does it not connect in some way? It has to connect. And that's the dream, right? A Daredevil season in not just Matt Murdock showing up in No Way Home, but properly being connected to a Spider-Man movie. I mean, that is a comic book fan's dream right there.
Yeah, I mean, small word picture. The whole series is about stopping Fisk from doing whatever the fuck Fisk is doing, right? And maybe they stop him, but in the midst of it, he does become mayor. And now we have to really stop him. And Matt Murdock
politics, said, man,
we need some help. We need some help. You know anybody? Yeah, I got a kid.
It's a little webhead.
With my left hand free.
Come on, dude. Come go back on, to that. Man. Replay it.
Chills. It would
still,
be
still one of the best moments I've had in a theater my entire life.
It's the greatest needle drop in the history of the MCU, and I'm a Guardians fan.
I'm with you.
It's very exciting. And, you know, if God's listening, she would make it a very interesting Daredevil Spider-Man thing. You're right. It's fine. I'm an ally. It's cool. my cape's in the closet. It's okay. Other Marvel news.
Oh, this is a good one.
This is one of those quotes. This is Robert Downey Jr. had one today where I love when journalists and you know, these press junket journalists, they have a hard job coming up with unique questions that these people have heard over and over and over. I love ask actor or director if you would like to do this project. Of course, they're going to say yes. What the hell are they going to do? Say no.
That's why you ask the question.
It would be so weird if somebody's like, no, I'm good.
Somewhere like that. I mean,
I mean, Kirsten Dunst now. Like,
right.
Like, yeah, she's a whole paid actress. Yeah, yeah, no shit. Like, she can say what she wants. She's done this already. You know what I mean? Like, but people who... It's very funny. Sam Raimi was asked if he would like to direct Avengers Secret Wars, and they said they haven't asked me yet, but I hope they do. And this is probably the most contentious thing on the Direct Podcast right now. Is Sam Raimi a good fit for an Avengers movie in the MCU? Sam Raimi, for those who don't know, the original Spider-Man trilogy director, and he already has an MCU credit, Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. We can get into the pros and cons of it if you'd like. I do just want to shout out one of my favorite Twitter comments is when I posted that I don't think Sam Raimi would be a good fit because he doesn't have a great track record. Somebody commented, he's only done 4 comic book movies.
That's really
that funny. Is so many comic book movies.
That is a lot.
4. I mean, 4. That's got to be some of the most of all time, right?
Yeah.
Like Russo's have done 4.
I was gonna say that is definitely up there. Like Favreau hasn't even done 4. He only did 2.
Yeah.
Gunn did 3. Gunn's done. Yeah. So Gunn will be number 1.
Well, yeah. After Superman, he'll be number 1 because Russo's have done 4.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Burton did 2. Yeah. Like somebody said, he's only done.
Nolan
4.
Did 3.
I thought that was really funny.
it is really funny.
Bryan Singer is probably up there.
Bryan Singer actually might be number 1.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. But still, that's a very funny quote.
Funny.
David Thompson, why is Sam Raimi a good fit for Avengers Secret Wars?
I think this would be awesome. I mean, I'm thinking of this if we actually have Tobey back as Spider-Man for this movie, which I'm kind of expecting right now. Because what else are you going to do with Secret Wars? If you're going to, like, we have Hugh Jackman back, we've already reintroduced the Spider-Man, we're going to, like, have all these, you know, characters together. It seems like this is what they're going to be doing. They're going to be, like, you know, kind of clashing all these universes with the MCU, which, you know, sign me up. I love the original Spider-Man trilogy, of course. That really goes without saying. In terms of Multiverse of Madness, what he's done recently, I loved the way that movie overall was presented, how it looked, and a lot of the directional, I would say, like, attributes. I would say Multiverse of Madness was more poorly written and had more weird universe kind of because they were doing, because the movie had, you'd go into the Multiverse of Madness and it seems like they had to kind of do X, Y, and Z for the MCU, for the universe, for the multiverse saga. I think that ended up hurting it, but I actually thought, like, the way Sam Raimi directed specifically Scarlet Witch was phenomenal. Even, I mean, Doctor Strange, like, there are some weird moments in Multiverse of Madness. The eye at the end to the post-credit scene. I don't know if that's a director's fault, because that's not what a director is in charge of, really. Like, a universe setting up post-credit scene. No way Sam Raimi was like, oh, I just dreamt up this idea. Let's roll with this. That was something.
Why no way? Why is that no way? Like,
I don't think so.
Like, that scene and the Clea scene are different scenes. You know what I mean? Like, the first scene's
really good. And I think that's more so like, yeah. When the third eye pops, it looks weird. But when it pops up and it's like kind of scary that he still has the eye, that was a good ending to the movie, in my opinion.
The electric guitar.
I liked it. And here's the thing. Like, sure, maybe there is someone else better out there. Raimi has the experience and he's got awesome style. I love how Sam Raimi's movies look. Like, I love the original trilogy. And obviously there's some CGI moments, but in general, I love the style he brings to these projects, including Multiverse of Madness.
I agree with the style aspect of it. Obviously, from a cinematography standpoint, he is one of the better comic book directors of all time. If for nothing else, the foundational part of Spider-Man being like kind of like the first great cinematography comic book movie. You know what I mean? Of the modern time. Like, these X-Men movies we're about to review, all the good that they have, cinematography was never their strong point. Sam Raimi brought that to the Spider-Man movies.
100%.
But I think, honestly, like, my reason I think not only he wouldn't be a good fit, the reason I think he would be a very bad fit is that last scene of Multiverse of Madness. Yes, you know, I'm not going to say that you're wrong for thinking it's cool. I get, you know, I didn't love it, but that's a style thing, right? Style's objective.
Mm-hmm.
Subjective. Style's subjective.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it looks cool. Yes, it's a very energetic scene. It's kind of a crazy twist, right? From a character standpoint, the fact that Doctor Strange went the whole movie being told that he's the problem, he's the one that always gets in trouble. This third eye Doctor Strange is what it always ends up being. He's the biggest threat to this, that, the other. The fact that at the end of the movie he gets the eye just tanks any character progression you can think of from that movie. And that's really what it boils down to me with Sam Raimi. His style is great. His substance, not only it, I don't think is good, I think it lacks. I think it takes away from so much of the comic book movies he does, Multiverse of Madness included, specifically with Doctor Strange. I think he does better in that movie than the Spider-Man movies. But when you look at the Spider-Man movies, like, I would be very interested to hear an argument that the relationships between Peter and Harry and MJ, MJ and Peter, all of them, are good. I would be very interested to hear somebody argue for that, because it they are not great relationships. They're bad people to each other. And it tanks the movie a little bit for me, as an adult rewatching it. You know what I mean? But like that is something that is in every single Spider-Man movie. And then you go to the Multiverse of Madness movie, and I think that Doctor Strange just like, he's not a good, like, the character progression there kind of sucks. And like Wanda says it, like, you break the rules and nobody says anything. I do it and I get pumped. That he just keeps breaking the rules in that movie. And that's kind of what tanks it for me.
Mm.
The reason I think for Avengers Secret Wars specifically, he would be a bad fit is because that's the movie where I want, and I think we all kind of need, the character part to be high level, because there are going to be so many moving pieces. I don't trust Sam Raimi with so many moving pieces from other movies interacting with each other. And I know you said writing. We've seen Michael Waldron write Loki.
Right.
I've seen Sam Raimi direct bad characters four different times now. You know what I mean? And so that's just kind of where I'm at. I think when you're finding a director for an Avengers movie specifically, you need someone like Joss Whedon. You need someone like the Russo brothers that are so good at weaving together different characters, where I think that that is one of Sam Raimi's biggest falls.
I will counter with one of my favorite movies of all time, Spider-Man 2, in terms of the characters, because I think to put aside MJ and Harry for a second, because I think there's, it's very easy to point out issues. I do think MJ and Peter in Spider-Man 2 is the most interesting dynamic of the three movies. But I do think what's done so well with the characters in that movie specifically is Peter's relationship with himself within his own character, Spider-Man and Peter, you know, that's an all-time story arc in Spider-Man 2. Secondly, him and Aunt May. I think it's such a great connection they have. That scene when she's like packing up, moving out, and there's the little kid helping, and she has that moment. And obviously at the time, Peter, it's right before he goes back to being Spider-Man. He's been done with Spider-Man. All-time moment between those two. And then also Peter's relationship with the villain, with Doc Ock, with Molina. Like that's the heart and soul of the movie. And that's what makes, I think, Spider-Man 2 such an all-time comic book classic, is because Doc Ock is so great. And them, that character building that we got a little bit of a tease of in No Way Home, which just was warm my heart so much. I think it is really phenomenal, like the character dynamics between those people. And I agree. I mean, there is elements where, yeah, like with Harry specifically, Harry is just a bit of a mess in, I would say, the Raimi trilogy, especially as I've grown older. I've learned that more and more.
He's the worst comic book character we've gotten. I'm sorry. Of people who have gotten three movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he got three movies. He never got better. Damn. He never got better.
Yeah.
Maybe Jean Grey. I don't know.
Gosh, Jean Grey. We'll get there. But yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. If this happens, this will become an all-time conversation on this podcast forever. And it's going to be an amazing ride. I don't think it's going to. I will say, I do not think this is going to happen. I do not think they're going to bring back Sam Raimi to direct an Avengers movie. I don't see it happening. They're going to get someone new, someone different, someone younger and less, with less experience with Marvel movies, less of a history with all of it.
I think when you look at the history of the MCU and Avengers movies specifically, they brought on Joss Whedon because Joss Whedon had a proven track record of ensemble writing. Like, he wrote one of the greatest X-Men runs of all time in 2008. You know what I mean? So like they knew going in, he had the move of team character dynamics. Mm-hmm. When you look at when they handed the Russo brothers the reins for Infinity War and Endgame, it was coming off of Winter Soldier, where he blended together a lot of different characters from different movies in that movie. Civil War, obviously Avengers 2.5, they had a tryout. I feel like they understand the priorities of a director's skill set going into a team-up movie. And in my opinion, it is very much the character dynamics, the storytelling aspects, the writing, and interpreting the writing. Again, like I'm not here to say the writing or the directing was the part of my issues with Multiverse of Madness. I just know I've seen Michael Waldron ball the fuck out. And Sam Raimi, yes, you can point out a handful of good moments. I've seen him fail on that aspect enough to where I just don't think I trust him with the biggest crossover movie of all time. Like that's the thing. It's I think less so about Sam Raimi and more so about like what this movie needs. Like, this movie needs a Russo brother. This movie needs a Favreau. And I'm not saying you have to bring somebody from the MCU roster already, but you need somebody who has a proven track record in this big of a movie, where I just don't think Sam Raimi does. Multiverse of Madness, his best, you know, example of it was how many characters were in that. And it's unfortunate for me, I didn't like what he did with the main character in that movie, which is where, you know, it's just, it's a trust thing. And it's a big fucking movie.
Very big. And it'll be very interesting to see who takes on both these Avengers movies roles.
100%.
Yeah.
I say Coogler. I mean, it's hard.
I don't know. I would love to see John Watts take one of them.
Sure. I mean, why not Favreau?
It could be our guy that's doing Deadpool 3.
Sean Levy.
I think he is a heavy
Mr. MCU
candidate for Secret War specifically.
For somebody who's never directed an MCU movie, I feel like he's already directed like five. you know what I mean? Like,
I know. I think he's got to be the favorite right now. That's completely me just coming up with that.
And it would be, you know, it'd be very Marvel Studios. If Deadpool and Wolverine slaps, why wouldn't they give it to him? Like, that's kind of why they gave Waldron the job for Multiverse of Madness, right? Because Loki was so, you know, they liked what he
Waldron's writing, isn't he? I don't know. I don't remember.
He was supposed to be writing Secret Wars. It switched so much.
We don't know. And then we had the whole, Jeff Loveness thing.
Yeah. All right. That is your Red Brand update. I feel like that was civil.
We didn't only get worse if we
didn't get into Spider-Man 2 enough for it to not be civil, I don't think. Yeah.
Well, you're right.
I pay Johnny Thompson down the street to come help me move. He's getting $5 for it. Come on, dude. It's classic. It's so good.
I love that movie. I'm seeing it in theater soon when they do the re-releases.
I'm so jealous. I'm so angry. So angry.
Like Harry in that movie just snarling 24/7.
Nobel Prize, Otto. Nobel Prize.
When the flip switches that when it's Harry's, when it's Peter's birthday. How's your bug?
How's your buddy Spider-Man?
How's your buddy Spider-Man doing?
19 years old. So,
seen the bug lately?
How's your buddy Spider-Man? You're here. You came to my house.
James Franco looks amazing in that movie, by the way. Just an all-time
Of the best hair he's ever had.
The highlighted hair. So early 2000s, just amazing.
Mm-hmm. It is truly magnificent. It really is. Kirsten Dunst also looks really good in that movie.
They casted a hot cast and then were like, let's figure it out. Let's do it.
Yeah, man. Yeah, they did. You're absolutely right. Quick Star Wars updates. The Mandalorian Grogu will hit theaters May 22nd, 2026. David, remind me why that is that different? Is that new? Did we not know a date?
Brand new. Yeah, that was the first Star Wars date by Disney that was on their slate. We knew it was going to be May probably, but we didn't know the actual date. So it's now official. Okay. It's just been officially stated by Disney. That's when Star Wars returns to theaters. So mark it. Memorial Day weekend, 2026. Star Wars is back in cinemas.
It's going to be very different because when you think Star Wars, what month do you think?
December now.
December, right? Star Wars Christmas. It's a thing. Giving it the May slot, though, that's bang. That's the slot. That's where you put your moneymaker in that Memorial Day slot.
Avengers 5 is supposed to release 2 weeks before this.
I got a Rise of Skywalker situation. We got a problem. That'll be interesting. I'm excited, dude. Just
we'll see.
I want to hear that score in theaters. That's it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's going to be amazing. Ludwig's
Mando score in theaters. That's all I've wanted for 5 years now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Think about Mando, dude. Like, it's been 5 years. Like, that's enough to grow like a deep fandom. You know what I mean? Like, this is one of the best Star Wars characters of all time. And it's been 5 years. I think it's enough to say that.
Yeah. Mando and Grogu, I think for a lot of people, is like
modern day
new characters that people are attached to. And I think that's going to show in the box office. I think this is going to be a massive, massive hit.
How is it not? Another Star Wars update. James Mangold's, can't wait till we watch Logan, dude. James Mangold's Dawn of the Jedi movie is being co-written by Bo Willimon? Digimon, Digital Monsters. Bo Willimon, who is a writer on House of Cards and Andor, expected to be Mangold's next project after the Bob Dylan biopic, Leaping Swamp Thing in DC. Bob Dylan, yeah. Mangold, Dawn of the Jedi. It's going to be dark. It's going to be 2.5 hours long. Are we excited?
Dude, so cool. I love how they got this guy to write. He's co-writing the story. Like, Dawn of the Jedi is going to be such an awesome movie. I can already just feel it in my bones. I cannot wait for this one. Yeah.
Question. Do we think Acolyte has any sort of, like, are Acolyte and Dawn of the Jedi going to have any sort of relationship to each other?
I doubt it. Yeah, this is 15,000 years in the past. This is
right, but like it's kind of the same story a little bit, isn't it? Like the birth of the Sith, the birth of the Jedi.
Maybe. I mean, I think if anything thematically, I don't think anything plot wise. Sure. I think this movie, I think what Kathleen Kennedy, whomever else, they're like, James, Duncan Mangold, do your own thing. Make this
way back.
Yeah. Like, I mean, this is as far back as you can go. This is the Genesis story of Star Wars. And I can't wait. It is, I think, interesting news for us in this podcast. You know, this is apparently going to be happening before Swamp Thing. So that puts in perspective when Swamp Thing will be happening a ways down the line. And Dawn of the Jedi will be a 2027 release, maybe. So, you know, James Mangold is a very busy guy. He is not going to be making any of the Avengers movies. If you can say that for certainty.
Yeah. No, I think that's okay. Indiana Jones was good.
Yeah, I like that movie. You know, more I think about it,
I really liked it. I liked it more than I wanted to, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think it was good. I liked it, though.
Yeah, it's fun. And it looked good. James Mangold's movies look good.
It looks fantastic.
Yeah.
It looks fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, that's everything you need to know about the universes you love. Let's get into the throwback machine a little bit here. You know what I mean? Let's get back to the late 90s. Ladies and gentlemen, X-Men 97, Episode 4, review. X-Men 97, Episode 4, it is a two-parter. David Thompson, your overall thoughts. Episode 4, X-Men 97.
It was cute. It was fun. I liked it. You know, it was one of those, it's side stories, you know. We get Jubilee. Who's the other kid she's with?
Sunspot.
Sunspot. I keep forgetting that mutant's name. Sunspot.
He's a new mutant cover boy.
Yeah, I really liked, you know, I really liked this episode for what it was. You know, obviously not no crazy big ideas, but going into the video game kind of realm and like what they did with animation in this episode stuck out to me the most. So yeah, like this can be a short review today because there really wasn't anything crazy like the last couple of episodes and kind of getting us all in. But now I'm here, I'm attached, I'm watching, and it's just a lot of mutant fun. I'm glad they're still able to have like fun like this and do like those cool pixelated moments with the video games and all these amazing throwbacks, which I think is just so cool. So yeah. What were your thoughts?
I think that this was a very this was something I think is under the radar, really bold from Disney Plus here to have a two-part episode. Like, it is 15 minutes, very classic old school Saturday morning cartoon. Like, how many Pokemon episodes are 15 minutes of one story and 15 minutes of another? You know what I mean? But to have the first 15 minutes be exactly what you just said, like such a side story, like such a tie-in comic, such a Jubilee story, just to kind of give her some shine. And, you know, she's awesome. You know, like, she's like visually one of the better X-Men characters you can find. She's got the style. She's got the fireworks, the sunglasses. Come on, dude. When she flips the sunglasses down, you can't beat it.
Style of this show is just so cool in general.
It's amazing. The 8-bit thing like you talked about. I hate Mojo. I've always hated Mojo. But that's, I mean,
yeah,
he's been somebody I've hated since I was a kid. You know what I mean? But you're supposed to. He's incredibly hateable, right? But I think it's really cool that, like, the second part, the Stormforge stuff, exposition heavy. It's 15 minutes of a story. But did you notice? It's part one.
Yeah.
So there's the Motendo part of it.
Motendo. I love that.
I know, right? It's a 15-minute side story for Jubilee, and then it's a 15-minute almost epilogues at the end of a book.
What's prologue.
The beginning? Prologue. It's like a 15-minute prologue to whatever I think Storm. Whatever episode 5 is going to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, like giving 15 minutes of this exposition between Forge and Storm to kind of tee up maybe a full Storm episode next week.
Which I would love. Yeah.
Really bold, really interesting way to do it. Like, to have a two-parter, 15-15, of two different side stories, that's a throwback cartoon style right there. But to use that second half as a prologue, I think is a really cool thing. And I think it's interesting. And I can't wait to see kind of how they roll that out. Oh, you know what, David? I'm looking at the episode list right here. So next week, the title is Remember It, whatever that is. The following week is Life Death Part 2. So they are really Game of Thrones.
Wow. Okay.
They're really Game of Thrones-ing the Storm story, keeping it in the background, and assumingly we're going to get a full episode in 2 weeks.
Cool. I love that idea.
I like it too. Like, it's low stakes. It's 15 minutes, but whatever they did in this episode with Storm and Forge, the relationship they had, the horse's name was dope. I love, you know, you want to feel like you're riding on the wind? Get on a fucking horse, man. That's a great move. I like that.
Yeah.
Forge is smooth with it. Forge is smooth with it.
He is.
But I love that table setting for Life Death Part 2 because now it's hit the ground running time. Now it's Storm versus Forge, that kind of thing. So very cool. I think it was a cool thing. Do you have a biggest winner, loser, or play of the game that you would like to mention?
I would say, honestly, just like winner-wise, it kind of, remembering that second half of the episode, it was Storm. Like you were saying, I like the idea we're going to get back to this in a couple of weeks because I'm really interested in this story, in this kind of like elements and issue conflict that's happening. that's happening in this X-Men 97 series. So yeah, that Storm's the biggest one for sure. And in general, I just think her character is so interesting. And the fact that like they did such a great job so quickly in the show being like, oh my gosh, like Omega level, whatever, crazy powers, boom, nothing. And now we're moving on to this character story, which I think is just being told so well.
Yeah, it's fun. It's awesome. That's my winner as well. Just kind of the pacing of this Storm story, which is such a, it feels Thronesy. It does. Like it, as much as it's a 30-minute animated show, it's kind of Thrones vibe as far as how they're weaving a couple stories together and pacing them, like intentional pacing episode to episode. I thought it was very cool. Ladies and gentlemen, that is episode 4, X-Men 97, Motendo / Life Death Part 1. It's a title. That's a title. Yeah. Yeah, we can go with it. Let's keep it going, guys. The Mutant Marathon has begun, okay? That is our fourth X-Men 97 review. Third review, fourth episode. But now we get into it. Now we get into the weeds. We like Storm in this show. Will we like Storm in the X-Men movies? Stick around to find out. Ladies and gentlemen, the Mutant Marathon begins now. And your starting lineup for X-Men 2000. Hugh Jackman as Logan, a.k.a. Wolverine. Patrick Stewart as Professor Charles Xavier. Ian McKellen as Eric Linger, a.k.a. Magneto. Famke Janssen as Jean Grey. James Marsden as Scott Summers, a.k.a. Cyclops. Halle Berry as Aurora Monroe, a.k.a. Storm. Anna Paquin as Rogue. Tyler Mann as Sabretooth. Ray Park, our guy, as Toad. Rebecca Romijn as Mystique, Bruce Davidson as Senator Kelly, and Sean Ashmore as Bobby Drake, a.k.a. Iceman. I love seeing Sean Ashmore do things, man. Love seeing Sean
Ashmore. Barely in this one, but he'll be back. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he will be back. Directed by Brian Singer, written by Dom DeSanto, music by Michael Carmen, executive producers Kevin Feige and Richard Donner.
That's called handoff right there. That's how you
amazing.
Do it.
You'll love amazing. To see it.
This is the center point of all comic book films.
This is the nexus of it, man. It's really cool. This is really my first theatrical film with an executive producer title.
That's crazy.
Does this, and then he's the final credit along with Stan Lee in Spider-Man 2.
Gotcha.
Very cool.
Much better movie.
Than this? Spider-Man 2?
Oh, yeah. Got to throw that out there.
Better? I don't know about much. This is a good movie.
Much
ladies and gentlemen, this is our X-Men Mutant Marathon. This is our rewatch, and we are going to start right here at the beginning. The very first X-Men movie, the first Marvel live-action movie that isn't Blade. Punisher and then Blade. I think this is it. Like, as far as theatrically released, you know what I mean?
That's crazy.
The first superhero movie of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. It's very exciting. I'm very excited to talk about it. These are the movies I grew up on. These are my roots as far as comic book movies. These and the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. David, I cannot wait to go through all of these with you. So let's dive right into it. Your overall thoughts. Spoilers abound. Obviously, this movie's 24 years old.
Yeah.
This movie is as old as your wife.
Correct. Yeah, possibly older.
Which makes me feel very old.
Let's see. Let's actually see exactly. It is a little bit younger. Yeah. Just by a few months. Wow, that's crazy to think. Yeah. So I mean, look, first things first, Mutant Marathon. Really? We're doing the thing. I'm so happy to be here. And I am excited to talk about these movies in not a critical way, but to poke holes and have fun. Because there's so much in this movie I want to talk about today where I liked this movie. I enjoyed watching it. And you can see so much that has been, you know, built upon that we're going to get to in like X2 and beyond. But even in other comic book movies from X-Men 2000, it is that nexus point. It is that very beginning. There is so much that is 2000s and so much they weren't sure about. They didn't know. It felt like they didn't know what to do. So they just kind of went with something and it may or may not have worked. This movie is so fun to kind of poke holes at, make fun of, but all in a good spirit. Like, I want to have fun with this, and I liked the movie. So, X-Men 2000, I think the introductions to the team are pretty well done. I think, personally, looking back, it's even more apparent the home runs they hit with casting and the misses they made with casting, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, let's just start from the beginning. Like, Hugh Jackman, Logan, can't even, I mean, that's not even a conversation. Patrick Stewart as Professor X, can't even talk about it. Perfect. Ian McKellen as Magneto. Perfect. After that, then, like, that's what's so weird about this movie, in my opinion. Like, there are, I mean, these are one for one acting choices, like casting roles, and they are perfect. Like, I love all three of them in this. Not a fan of James Marsden as Cyclops. Halle Berry is doing this accent in this one.
Kind of.
Doesn't come back. Doesn't come back, by the way.
He does like half of it.
And I hate every second of it. Like, I hate it. And I do not like Rogue at all. Yeah, I do not think she's well cast. I'm not a fan. And my all-time least favorite X-Men characters in this movie, Toad. I absolutely hate Toad. And you wonder why? Because I have a very bad fear of frogs. And I hate Toad. Yeah. But yeah, anyway.
Really quick, while we're on Toad, I have to. Do you know who Ray Park is?
Yeah, of course.
Come on. How cool is that, dude? The elevator moment.
Yeah.
Come on.
He does a little spin.
Yeah. Dude, it's a whole homage. And that movie just came out like a year earlier.
The year before. Yeah. But I hate Toad.
No, he's bad in this.
And who even is Mystique? I couldn't even tell you.
Rebecca Romijn.
Okay.
Formerly Rebecca Romijn Stamos.
Is that right?
And now she is married to Jerry O'Connell.
Oh, interesting. And then Jean Grey, I would say I'm the most lukewarm.
I'm Kay Jensen.
Yeah. Jean Grey, they haven't gotten right yet, in a way. And it is what it is, but it's kind of sad because it's such a great character. And I like Jean Grey, the character in the movie, but I don't love the performance. And she's the one she's the one I'm the most looking, like, watching it back. I'm like, okay. Like, I kind of like you, but I don't necessarily think you're a great cast. But I definitely don't think you're, like, you know, this wonderful casting either.
What an insanely attractive cast.
Very.
Anke Jensen, James Marsden. Like, that might be the most handsome couple of all time.
Yeah, they definitely were. Halle Berry. Storm.
Me oh my. I agree with everything you just said about the casting, like, to a T. Like, those first three are home runs. Anna Paquin, I have a soft spot from just from Fire Away Home, but I don't like her in this movie very much.
I do not like her at all in this movie. She takes me out of the movie.
She doesn't
commit so bad.
She just half commits, and when you have the accent and you're such an important character, you gotta.
I watching it back, I almost forgot, because I remember it's like, okay, Rogue and Wolverine, but I forgot how critical of a character she is and her powers meaning all of this. Yeah.
Who said I was looking for you? Oh, come on. What a moment.
That was great. That was when he had him locked, when he's moving his, like, claws around. That was one of the best looking parts, because there's a lot that looks very silly in this because it's from 2000. Looked, I thought, really good, like the spreading out of the claws. And, like, by the way, speaking of that, top play, don't give a shit, we're going out of order really quick, in the Statue of Liberty.
Oh,
you guys should run. Why? I can't move. That was so good. That is like the best. I mean, Magneto is such an incredible character.
And then they work as a team at the end where he passes it to Jean, Cyclops, and then throw him up there, balance him. Yeah. Well, what's Scott going to do? He's got to get fucking off him. Oh, it's so good.
Anyway,
there are three other scenes I thought you were going to talk about before you were going to talk about that one.
Well, I was thinking about the metal and Magneto. Yeah. That's why my brain went there.
I can't move. I'm not the only one in here.
Yeah.
we gotta reconnect with the team. Only one problem. You're not a part of the team. Stir.
Yeah. That I was gonna say, when he sniffs out Mystique, that was amazing. Yeah. I hate how Mystique just lives through everything. It's like, God, what are the Mystique is just overpowered in this movie. Hate to say it. Completely overpowered. Like,
it's true.
Unbelievable.
She's dope though.
Well, Mystique, she's like the shape-shifting character, and Mystique specifically in the X-Men movies has always been so frustrating. It's like the most frustrating character to throw into a movie, and it can be used very well. And overall, she's the best of the Brotherhood in this movie, I would say, besides Magneto.
Right. I think it's acted very well. It's just, she can climb up a pipe upside down with her hands, and she lived through a stab. Like,
she has the claws. I don't know.
Yeah, but they get cut off and she screams. Yeah. So funny. dude, yeah, dude. And Mystique's going to keep being more important as we go.
Right.
I watch these movies with such rose-tinted glasses.
Yeah.
In such a big way. Like, I just remember every single scene as a little kid.
Right.
So, like, so I you got to forgive the wire work, I guess. With a critical eye, yeah, it's a dumb, you know, plot comic book movie, but it was 2000. You know, like Dark Knight hadn't come out yet. Iron Man hadn't come out yet. The evolution hadn't changed.
Even Spider-Man, even
the plot in the first, second, and third Spider-Man are thin at best. You know what I mean?
Spider-Man looks better than this movie.
For sure. Completely different styled movies. Like,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
To the nth degree, right?
Oh, yeah. But just think about like Spider-Man swinging compared to like Wolverine on the Statue of Liberty with his claws at the end.
For sure. Spider-Man also has the right angle swings in those movies as well, It's just a two leg kick.
Yeah.
But like that is very much more turning a cartoon into a movie. This is making a movie a cartoon, you know? So like,
and this is trying to make it, I think they try to make, they try to make X-Men cool, but like in a early 2000s kind of cool, like with the leather outfits and everything.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just get into my biggest loser right away. The idea that they felt like they had to make fun of the comic book stuff in this movie,
and they used
Wolverine to do it. They were like Rogue, Storm, Cyclops. What do they call you? Wheels? This is stupid. And you know, they make fun of the suits and they make fun of the team and they do it because they think that the cool thing to do in the year 1999 is to poke fun at comic book nerds. So they do it in this movie so they're laughing at themselves and they're doing exactly what you said, trying to make them cool. But they just hadn't realized yet the real way to do it is to actually make it cool. Make Iron Man cool. You know what I mean? Make Batman cool. And instead of just making fun of the absurdity of it, which this balances a really cool line of camp and also laughing at itself. It doesn't commit enough either way to be great. That would be my one critique from a critical thing is like, it sucks that this is an early comic book movie where they felt like they had to make fun of the genre to come across as, like you said, cool.
What do you think of the Magneto's plan of making everyone a mutant? Are you pro or against? Like, do you think it's a clever plot point? Do you think it's an interesting idea?
That you meant, am I pro or against forcing everyone to be a mutant and inevitably die?
No. Not getting political here.
I think it's worse on paper than it is here. Not to say that it's great here, but I think it's very cartoony. I think it's very cackling, twirling fingers, evil laugh plan. But the fact that they use Senator Kelly to show us what it is, the fact that it takes us so long to figure out what the plan is, and then that once part. It happens, it's moving. I think it's executed better than it is. And I think Senator Kelly is a real linchpin there because it's mysterious and weird. And using Rogue to do it makes a ton of fucking sense because we see Rogue use her powers in that way throughout the movie.
To heal.
And then how does Wolverine save her at the end? Grabs onto her face so she can hit. It's so good. So I think the plan on paper, meh. But honestly, the way that they kind of paced it out using Senator Kelly and Senator Kelly rushing back to the school, I got to see Jean Grey and, you know, like all that. Like, I think they did it as good as it could have been done.
Yeah, there's something with me where I think the execution in the way you're putting it is good, but how it looked was bad, in my opinion, which is a silly critique because the movie's so old. But like, I thought just the way when it first happens, what I didn't like in terms of execution was how it wasn't clear what was happening. Like Magneto's just doing this thing and he's struggling like at his, like in his little like sphere thing. And we have no idea. And then we later understand when like Senator Kelly like slips through and escapes kind of what happened. I didn't love how one loser I had of this movie, which normally isn't something I would be complaining about. But, you know, we see it now with the animated series revival where the team is so big and vast. In this one, it's too small in general. Like, I thought Magneto's Brotherhood team, it just felt so small. Like, it's just him, Sabretooth, Toad, and Mystique. And watching the movie back, it's like, I feel like it felt like in the build up to the movie, the build up to him executing his plan in the movie, it seems like a lot of time has passed. Like, you know, old friend, we have all this background, great dialogue between.
Anytime they talk.
Oh my gosh. And the very end.
So you know, perfect.
The chessboard. It's awesome. It's so good. And I'm one thing with this rewatch I'm excited about is remembering and not getting too caught up in like how it all connects with the prequels. Because I kind of forget about that. Like, does it all connect? Does it all work?
Don't think about it.
Exactly. And that's going to be my mindset, but it is easy to, poor little guy. It is easy to, when they're talking in this movie, think about, oh, right. Like, we're going to get some movies where they are young, you know, and we will get those dynamics. But I thought that in general, I wish there was more, and we get there. We get more X-Men, you know, throughout these movies. But in this one, it felt like if the team is, we sideline at by the end. I don't love the ending. It doesn't. I prefer ending the beginning of the movie. I like the beginning is actually pretty strong. You know, I don't like anything Rogue does. I just don't like the performance, and I just don't like the character in this movie. The powers are whatever. The powers are cool, but I just don't like the character. But the beginning is good. When we get introduced to Wolverine, Wolverine's just awesome in this movie. I love Wolverine. He's just so great. And I don't like Cyclops really. Jean Grey's okay. They're just kind of the residents there. They, you know, they teach. They're just the established X-Men. Same with Storm. You know, Storm and Cyclops are the ones that initially save them, and we get all of that.
Oh, I love that. It's those two though. It's cool. Good.
It is cool. By the way, best scene in the movie, or one of the best scenes in the movie, I have to really think about it. One of the best scenes in the movie is actually, it has to be the best scene in the movie, right? When I don't even know where they are, but when it's all the cop cars and it's Magneto with Mystique and Sabretooth.
It's outside Grand Central Station.
Yeah. And then it's the conversation through Sabretooth with Xavier and the chokehold and the gunshot and the bullet and the
amazing.
That is awesome. Like, that is where X-Men shines, in my opinion.
Where have you seen something similar?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Where was that?
You ready?
Yes.
WandaVision. Where Wanda, she steps out of the bubble, they're all pointing their guns at her, she flips them back, and they're all pointing at him now.
Yes.
And he just does one of these, and they all drop.
Oh, yeah, that was so good. That was a great scene.
Who is Wanda's father?
Magneto.
Come on, dude. It's amazing. No, that scene's incredible. I think, personally, objectively, the best scene in the movie is Wolverine's introduction.
The intro. That's really great. Yeah.
I mean, that scene will stick with me for the rest of my life. Does it hurt?
Don't hit him in the balls. Yeah.
No, I'll just take it personally. that whole scene's great. Anna Paquin's great in that scene, being so scared the whole time. Rogue's intro, also very good, I think.
Scary. You know,
it's very coming of age. They nailed this, like, Georgia, I guess. This
Mississippi, I think.
Mississippi makes, I guess, a little more sense. As soon as I said Georgia, for whatever reason, Mississippi made more sense.
Yeah, Mississippi. Yeah.
Yeah, but like, you know, this, you know, the summer light, the boy upstairs, mom's playing the piano, and then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, that was terrifying.
Intro scene as well. Mm-hmm. All the intro scenes were bangers. Yeah. And like the
Cyclops and Jean Grey and like Storm,
but that was very comic accurate. You know what I mean? Outside of the black fucking spandex, which is just the dumbest thing they ever could have done, is the black. But you know, her much younger tossing the plates and him knocking them all out, like that's so
right.
X-Men. You know what I mean? Like if they would have put her in the Marvel Girl suit or him in the old the full cowl there, I think that would have been a really cool moment right there. But because they're in this black, you know, super cool spandex, it looks nerdy and it looks like dorky how they're doing it. But if they were in like a more retrofitted suit, I think it would have played a little better.
Yeah, I don't like the one part too with in terms of Cyclops, when I think it's in the train station, when he like very quickly gets his like thing knocked off, you know, his like front call it, you know, visor. Yeah. And it's immediately like all hell breaks loose. Like there goes the beam. And it's like, they did it almost a little too early for me, where it's like, like, let him do something before he, like, mess him up like that. I just
feel like you watching 97 before you watch this is an issue.
I mean, there's something to that, right?
So
where I mean, we are in this mutant marathon at the beginnings of it while one of the best mutant shows is actively happening on Disney Plus. And I think that that's fun, hopefully, for our listeners, that they're going to follow along, listen to this, watch X-Men 97, listen to that. Like, there is some fun to be had there. I'll tell you one thing that's consistent. Magneto is fucking awesome. Yeah, I love Magneto. You mentioned, like, there's something about, obviously, Ian McKellen in the role, but Magneto, like, I think his goon squad sucks. Like, I hate Sabretooth. I remember hating him as when I was younger watching this. Like, he just, like, drives me nuts. Like, I just, he looks so silly to me. Like, I don't know what it is. And it's not even like the whole, huge. Oh, it's 2000s. He's such a goon. Like,
his punk, he growls with bad ADR.
Yeah, exactly.
Horrible ADR.
And it seemed, what bothers me, and like, here's rewatching it specifically, it's like Magneto's awesome, and he really seems like a guy who has really bought into his ideals. And you want to believe, that's a common thread throughout X-Men. You want to be on Magneto's side, or you want him to be on your side. You want, and it's with Xavier. It's kind of through Xavier's lens, like, you want to see eye to eye. But in this movie, I feel like Magneto, besides Mystique, it's like, why are these your guys? Are these all the people you could find? You know, like, and he's like, he's locking Sabretooth in like the prison cell. I thought that was really funny.
I mean, they are effective at the end of the day. They do a good job of slowing them down.
I guess pulling it back, filmmaking wise, I wish it was different characters. I just wish it was different characters that maybe had a little bit more. Like, Mystique has more. Sabretooth and Toad don't have anything more to them. And
we're in the middle of the mutant marathon, my friend. Gonna a lot more about both of those guys.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know. I guess I feel like Magneto in the movie is so great, and I hate how in my head, thinking about the film, his brotherhood, it just takes away from it a little bit. Like, I wish it was a little bit different. But it's neither here nor there.
Yeah. I think also just Professor X, they do a great job with his power set, introducing Cerebro, giving him the walking Logan through the school thing. And you're like, over here, turn left. Who is it? And it gets him right to where he needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we find out what Magneto's plan is? He gets into Senator Kelly's mind and watches it through that. Like, that's, it's all very, the way they displayed everybody's power set, except for Cyclops, I thought was very cool.
I love the dynamic.
Cyclops just never got a cool action scene. That's really the end of it. But Cyclops, like, everybody else's power sets, I thought were displayed really well.
I think this movie, because of how they frame this movie and how it's executed, it sets up the rest of the films in terms of Wolverine being the guy. You know, like, I think if they had handled this first one differently, maybe different casting, different direction, like, you could have had different characters kind of be more of that lead that we never really get. Like, Storm. Storm, to me, has cool... She is such a moments character in these movies, right, to me. And I wish it was more than that. But it's okay, because we end up getting what ends up ultimately being this awesome, still going. We're leading up to Deadpool and Wolverine. Like, crazy to say, with Hugh Jackman. Like, Hugh Jackman is still doing this. Yeah. And it's awesome, having rewatched this just now, how great he was from the very beginning. You know, he gets a little bit more buff and shredded as they go on, but he is so great from the very beginning. Yep. And how old is he in this one, by the way? I mean,
young, very young.
I was thinking about it. He looks great, though. Like, as he ages, he really looks fantastic, because I thought, you know, he really, there's nothing about the performance that gets any worse as time goes on. And I think it's already so great from the very beginning. Right. And by the way, on
Patrick, else gets worse.
On Patrick, on Patrick Stewart's case, I think Halle Berry gets better. But on Patrick Stewart, you don't think so?
We'll see. Mutant Marathon.
Right. Well, next.
That's
week.
The issue of these early ones, these Bryan Singer ones. If a woman doesn't have a romantic plot, she has no plot. She has nothing.
And well, that was the fundamental issue, I think, with Cyclops in a way in this movie, is because he's just the other guy. We're rooting for Wolverine. It's like, he has eyes on Jean Grey, and we're like, oh, so maybe this will be a thing. And Jean Grey's kind of feeling it, you can tell. And I don't know, like, you know, it's like, are you scared to look in? Are you scared you'd like what you see? He's talking about like reading his mind. That's great.
Very good. That. Very good. There's one really weird scene with Cyclops where Wolverine cuts off the alarm in a very like aggressive, non-professional way. And Jean Grey's like, huh? Oh. And he does the middle finger, which is a funny little joke. And Cyclops' reaction is just,
yeah.
Just like, quip. Say a quip. Do a quip. Just do the quip thing. Like
he's just, he's so like, he's supposed to be confident, which I think is part of it, but he's not. It's almost like the way, it's almost like there's like scenes that are cut out of him being like a leader, being like being actually genuinely confident, because it feels like we're so from Wolverine's perspective,
right,
that he just seems like almost not like a villain, but just like so second rate.
For Cyclops and Storm specifically, this is one of those done dirty things. Like, yeah, they did not give them a good character to form around. I don't blame James Marsden. It's very hard to pull off that, like, cocky leader thing and also be likable when you don't have anything else to do other than be a cocky leader. Like it's very hard to pull off personality-wise. Like, you need to be Vince Vaughn, you know? And Aurora was just given nothing to do, ever. But yeah, this really is the shaping of Wolverine being the face of the X-Men, which when you watch the X-Men animated series or now X-Men 97, just so not the case. It's not Wolverine's show. It's nobody's show. It's Professor X's show, if anything. But the only other top plays, the mutant registration conversation, I thought was just so classic cartoon. You know, who's to say these mutants won't do this? Who's that won't do that?
Yeah.
Racism and bigotry across the board. Done so well by Kelly. And Kelly's so good in this. And Jean being on the other side. And, you know, some of them can even read minds. And, like, it's a shot of Jean, but then it zooms out and it's a shot of Professor X. And it's just, and then, yeah.
That's Jean's best scene, honestly.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely it is. Because she's not given anything else to do the rest of the movie.
Does the Cerebro thing, 5 seconds. Yeah.
That's the other thing. We're supposed to like Jean because Wolverine likes Jean. So now as an audience, we like Jean.
That's what I mean.
One of the only Scott Jean moments we really get is, you know, yeah, Professor uses Cerebro, but for someone like me, it can be, and then Scott comes in, dangerous. Come on.
We have a room down down the hallway. But it's like, the movie is very short. It's like maybe they cut stuff. Looking back, but
no, I love the headquarters underneath the school. That's another really cool.
That's awesome.
My big winner is the school.
Oh yes,
Professor 100%. X, what he's doing, what the team is doing. You see Cyclops teaching mechanics. You see Storm teaching science. You see Famke Jensen teaching. Like, you know, like we get that, and then Cyclops has. I mean, Professor X has no like. He's not hiding at all. Underneath, completely different story. You know, we got the danger room. We got this. We got that. And at the end, and the final line of the movie is fucking banger. What are you going to do, Charles, when they pass that law and they come for you? I feel a great swell of pity for anybody who comes to that school looking for trouble.
See you later. Come on,
man.
So good.
It's amazing.
Big loser. The music in this movie sucks.
Awful.
Oh, my gosh. I'm like,
terrible.
Why is it so bad?
Budget.
Like, there's no theme. There's no theme. There's no recognizable.
I assume that's where they cut money.
Had to have been. Yeah. The budget, I noticed. I was looking it up. I was looking at all the box office, by the way. By the way, quick aside with this Mutant Marathon thing. You know the highest grossing X-Men movies? If you just count any Fox X-Men movie, it's Deadpool 2, mm-hmm. Deadpool, Days of Future Past, mm-hmm. and Logan. So three of the top four are rated.
Yeah.
Crazy. But anyway, on that list I was looking at, this has like by far the lowest budget. It's $75 million, which after seeing that, pretty good job.
Checks out. Right.
$5 million.
Yeah. And it made a fuck ton of money. It made like $260 at the box office.
Great for the time. Yeah.
Made a ton of money. And you'll see it get bigger and bigger as we go. And that's why they made 13 of these. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, It's going to be fun. I'm really excited to watch all these. This is such a good starter. I don't think it's great, but it's such a good starter movie. And, you know, much how you feel about Spider-Man 2.
X2. I love X2. Yeah, I'm very excited for next week.
That's the fucking movie right there, man.
Striker. Well, because my big win, I didn't really mention, like, my only, like, thing I want to just make sure, like, to kick off this whole mutant marathon, Wolverine's introduction through this entire, and I'll just call this movie's introduction, so fantastic. Like, I would not change a single thing about his introduction. Like, literally, I was introduced all the way until the end and kind of given, like, hey, this is a place in Canada, you know. And, like, even, like, we get the flashbacks. We get to really see. Yeah, exactly. We get, which I think is really cool, because we obviously dive into his full origin eventually. His action, I think, is really cool. Seeing his powers, like sniffing it out, like using the claws. I think beyond everything else, they nail Wolverine, Professor X, and Magneto. And at the end of the day, that's what makes it a fun movie. That's what makes it a good movie, in my opinion.
And they carry the franchise for it.
And there it goes. Exactly. And I love how they just keep, well, it makes sense logically, but they keep Hugh Jackman. He is. And he's still doing it. It's amazing.
Best. Downey, Robbie, Jack.
Yeah.
That's my three right there. Ladies and gentlemen, that is X-Men 2000. Next week, we will be doing X2, X-Men United.
I'm very excited for X2.
X2 is awesome. I'm very excited. And also next week, we will begin our rankings. Obviously, this is number one and our favorite character, I would say, is Wolverine, Professor X, and Magneto. We're gonna track that.
All this movie ended up having to do, you know, and then we just ride that for 10 years.
Ladies and gentlemen, until then, we'll see you next time.